Dr. Wells is an assistant professor at Washington University in St. Louis, George Warren Brown School of Social Work, and affiliated faculty with the University's Institute for Public Health and the Interdisciplinary Program in Urban Studies and Studies and Center on Urban Research and Public Policy. Her research centers on community practice and public health with a common thread of interest in clinical interventions which improve recruitment, participation, adherence, and retention to research and practice with low-income and minority populations. She is currently a co-investigator for the NCI Center for Excellence in Cancer Communication Research, where she works with an interdisciplinary team to identify, test, and apply clinical and public health population-based patient navigation strategies and interventions in a population of socioeconomically disadvantaged Americans. She received her PhD in social work from the University of Southern California in 2009. She began her career as a home health social worker over 17 years ago, and most of her practice orientation has been as a clinical social worker in health and mental health settings, community clinics, hospitals, and psychiatric units in Southern California. Dr. Wells teaches at the master's level in the Clinical Social Work Health Concentration and Public Health Program. So join me in welcoming Dr. Wells.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay, good morning, or almost afternoon, I guess. So I'm going to be talking about African-American breast cancer survivors and women who were participating in a support group in the St. Louis area. And I don't have any personal relationships to disclose. So I'm not going to go over too much of the background in our previous presenters. We know, we understand the incidence mortality disparity that's prevalent with regard to African-American versus white women in breast cancer. But I do want to highlight a couple of things. The disparities in breast cancer mortality in part reflect these differential trends in diagnosis. So delaying, and we've heard about it in previous presentations, delaying diagnosis is a factor, as well as receiving timely and stage-appropriate breast cancer treatment, and just being overall less likely often to adhere and to comply with treatment recommendations. So in the literature, various interventions have used spirituality and social support as a part of their interventions to try to get more African-American women to adhere and to comply with the recommendations. I'll talk a little bit more about social support and spirituality in my results. So the main, so this was a qualitative study, secondary analysis of videotaped stories of African American cancer survivors. It was collected as a part of the Washington University Center for Excellence or Cancer Communications Project that was headed by Matt Kruder. So we examined the main coping facilitators used by African-American women as they transitioned across the cancer continuum, and then we wanted to identify some evidence or some facilitators then associated with evidence-based interventions that might be perceived as more culturally sensitive and useful in strategically getting women to move along the and have a successful coping with their experience. Just a little bit about how the sample, we got the sample. So our results are drawn from data collected during a larger mixed methods project that investigated African-American women survivors. So our research participants in the qualitative portion of that overall larger study included 47 African-American survivors and 13 family members. So the participants were recruited through project partnerships with five St. Louis area breast cancer support groups, mainly with African American women. And, but just for this study, I looked at 20 African American women diagnosed with breast cancer, and these women were identified randomly selected using a computer algorithm. So the interview guide was open-ended, and that was in order to allow the women to be able to narrate and talk about their experience openly and with a lot of detail. But our interview, the initial interview guide focused on these five open-ended probes related to coping, relationships, experiences with the healthcare system, follow-up care, and quality of life. We created some interview case summaries. Initially, the research team developed guidelines for writing the interview case summaries, and then once the case summaries were developed, we imported them into InVivo software for coding and analysis. Then we utilized an inductive thematic analysis approach to comparing the codes across the research participants. And so the average age of women in the subsample was 56.8 years old. The majority of participants were between the ages of 40 and 49, and most were insured. So this is the conceptual model that I developed based on the results of the interviews or the summaries. And it illustrates this sort of cyclical course, with each quadrant representing the different phases in the cancer trajectory. So as I move along, I'll start with screening and then move on to diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. So it'll kind of go in that direction. And this is somewhat different from other more linear diagrams that you'll see, where you'll see at one end of the spectrum there's screening and then diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. And I wanted to represent, to illustrate the data in this way, because there's a connection, there's a linkage between the survivorship and screening. It doesn't actually just stop at survivorship, and in the way, once I start to talk about more about the survivorship phase, you'll see that these women felt a need to want to inform other people, other women who had not been screened, based on their misperceptions and a lot of lack of knowledge that they have. So I think in some ways it's a catharsis for them as being a survivor, but it also has that dual role of providing information for other women who haven't been screened yet. So that's why it's kind of a cyclical model. So I'll go through these kind of quickly, because for some reason I thought we had more time. I thought it was like 30 minutes, but anyway. Okay, so I won't go over all of the, I'd be happy to share my slides with you. I can email them to you so you can get a better illustration of the quotes, but I'll just go through them kind of quickly. So in general, survivors had knowledge, kind of a pre-diagnostic biomedical knowledge of what it meant to have cancer, what cancer was, meanings attached to the term cancer. And so although survivors were familiar with the cancer disease and its seriousness, they also perceived their susceptibility and risk to be low, particularly if there wasn't a cancer history. So family members also, or survivors discuss family members often not talking about cancer or hiding it, and a lot of the description that we heard in the earlier presentations are consistent with this data. A common metaphor of this stage was that women reported having inaccurate information about actual screening and preventive procedures. There was the misperception, for example, in the mammograms there's radiation and that causes cancer. So many women described not receiving screening initially because of common misperceptions, which might have contributed to some delay. And let me mention, too, that all of the women that we analyzed this data for, they did not, their cancer was not diagnosed from a regular mammogram. It was through feeling a lump or feeling something that was unusual. All right. So with each of these different phases, I'll give you their experiences, their perceptions based on that phase, and then I'll also just briefly give some advice that they sort of a take-home message for everyone else, for you know others who either didn't have a mammogram or didn't go through cancer, but survivors felt a need to give advice to other women. So advice given at this stage involved descriptions of the mammogram procedure as a way of kind of reducing fear and uncertainty. And then these are some negative emotional reactions at diagnosis that they recall initially having, with shock being the most commonly described initial feeling at diagnosis. So here we see the beginning of this cross-cutting reflection about spirituality, which actually kind of continues throughout a little bit, but more into survivorship. But there's this feeling of renewed religiosity and a spiritual presence in meaning-making at this diagnostic stage when there's a lot of emotion and uncertainty. And the advice given at this stage was more on a kind of empowerment level. So they described the importance of obtaining knowledge at this diagnostic stage in order to empower women. Survivors described, I know this is a mouthful there, it's hard to read all of that, but essentially survivors describe their cancer treatment experiences and the associated needs at this stage. Survivors reported the increased need for emotional and instrumental support, and particularly with their spouse. And one interesting thing, the importance of, for those women who were still working, the importance of having a supportive work environment, coworkers who would be able to give them time off or are sympathetic and sensitive to the fact that they were going through treatment and going through this issue. That was important to them. And even for this woman who describes not really having her family that was particularly involved, she was able to find her support, a support network through the community and through her neighbor who was providing help for her. And the advice at this stage is sort of similar to that empowering element, but here they mentioned advocating. You see, they use that word a lot. To describe advocating for themselves during not only their just learning more about the treatment, but also during their interpersonal communications with their healthcare professionals. And this in the final stage, or not really final, but kind of the after treatment, post-treatment, women described and discussed their personal relationship with God and their spiritual meaning-making of this whole experience. And here's where I talked about a little bit earlier, this giving back and sharing as being really creating a dual role that a survivor can play. So the survivor sharing her story can be a catharsis to women to try to help understand the experience for women who are going through the illness, but also for women who need to receive more knowledge and advice from someone who's personally experienced the disease. And here, advice, survivors discuss the value of a support group as a vehicle for sharing and increasing knowledge for women. These, even in the videos, you could kind of see that them narrating and explaining their experience was helpful and useful to them. In a way, they're a way of giving back. So, almost done. Okay, all right. I was going to go back to the conceptual model just to get a visual of how I see the implications based on the different experiences at this different stage. But I'll just mention it. So as far as implications at the screening phase based on women's experiences, I think using educating women and using some psychoeducational components or approaches to help reduce the fear while also giving women knowledge. At diagnosis, I think it's important to combat some of those fears and uncertainty with some cognitive behavioral approaches and coping skills approaches, as well as using some empowering elements. As far as treatment, I think and a couple of our speakers have mentioned patient navigation, but this is particularly important, especially when you're dealing with a lot of red tape related to public sector care. So that's increasingly important, particularly at that stage, and these women did acknowledge that. And during the survivorship, I think peer support is important. Okay, and some of the limitations, these were interview summaries, so they weren't verbatim transcripts, so that's definitely, it was a little bit of a limitation. And there's no data on religious affiliation, so it's kind of unclear maybe if the results transcended race and ethnicity and involved some elements of religion. There was some sample bias in that only women in church-based support groups were selected. And this is involving retrospective data. And, you know, we know the nature of storytelling kind of has this retrospective element where there's sometimes poor recall. So future directions, I'm in the process now of putting together a grant where I'm focusing more on the earlier screening phase, where I would like to use elements of maybe peer support through people who have actually been through cancer to help get other women screened for cancer. But I think in future directions, it's important to use prospective interview data with perhaps unscreened women and those who've had a recent diagnosis or treatment and those who have not necessarily participated in a support group would be important. So to acknowledge, this was funded as a part of a Junior Investigator Award through NCI Excellence in Cancer Communication Research Program. I want to acknowledge the breast cancer survivors, of course, and the community partners, and then some research assistants who are helping with the qualitative analysis. Any questions?